The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. We'll rejoin Kitty Werthmann's speech describing her experiences growing up under the Nazi regime in World War II.
And he said, the only way that we can track a criminal is by the serial number of the gun. And therefore, you have to register your guns. Then we can catch the criminals. And we thought, that's a good idea. Surely, we went to the police station, brought the guns, that he could check the serial number, and we thought he would catch all the criminals again. We were very law-abiding citizens. Not long afterwards, they said, well, it didn't help. We still have criminals. Kids still get hurt by guns. And things happen. The best way that nothing bad happens and that nobody gets murdered anymore, you bring the guns to the police station. And if you don't, there's capital punishment on that. I didn't see any heroes. We turned our guns in. You see, dictatorship didn't happen overnight. It took 5 years, from 1938 until 1943, step by step, to graduate up to a dictatorship. Had we had dictatorship overnight, and we still had our guns, we would have fought a bloody, bloody battle. So when I go out and speak all over the country, I will tell everybody, keep your guns and buy more guns and make sure and just make sure that you have plenty of ammunition. Hitler was a very clever geopolitical politician. Very clever. He was not deranged from the very beginning. He only got deranged at the very late. He also nationalized our churches. He said those beautiful cathedrals are so expensive for upkeep. Costs a lot of money for restoration. And we just don't get enough money in the basket what you collect every Sunday. So we have to put a church tax on there. So we had a church tax. Everybody, when they paid their income tax, they paid an additional 2% of church tax. And the downside was the priests and ministers could not speak out anymore. He had to be silent. So he nationalized our churches. And of course, we also had a huge welfare system. Everybody was entitled to a guaranteed income. And if your income was less than what the government decreed, you got food stamps. You got subsidized housing, you got clothes, you got everything, you got free child care. Guess what our taxes were like? Our taxes climbed up to 68% and 70%. High taxes, total welfare, from the cradle to the grave. Everything, everything. So we had total socialism. Again, I would refer to national nationalizing everything. Well, of course, education was being nationalized. Our banks were being nationalized. Our radio stations were nationalized. Everything was under government control. Everything. Everything. And we lost our freedom of speech. Anyone who spoke out anything against the government, the Gestapo was right there and picked you up. Also very interesting, when we speak of socialism, in the last legislative session, Dave Krantz, the columnist from the Argus Leader, approached me and praised me for my Right to Life work. And I said, well, that's nice of you to say that. But I said, there, you should also be interested there. A lot of bad bills around here. And I said, one bill especially, that's the pre-kindergarten bill, that they want to put 3- and 4-year-olds in the school system. I said, that is pure socialism. He said, don't talk about socialism. Don't talk about socialism. And I said, it takes more than you than to shut me up. In 1985, I had the privilege to go to Geneva to the Reagan, President Reagan and Gorbachev summit meeting. My mission was to infiltrate the peace march. There were thousands of people there, of course. People came from everywhere. And of course, there was a huge delegation from America, from Hollywood over there, Barbara Boxer, Jesse Jackson, a lot of movie stars, and everybody. And we assembled in the English Garden and then marched to the Hotel Hilton for a press conference. I marched with the late Congresswoman Bella Abzug and Chester Jackson, and I was in disguise. I looked really horrible. I had a plastic wart on my nose. I looked really like a hippie. And as we arrived there, I walked in with Bella Abzug. She was greeted by a German woman who had a seat in the parliament of the Green Party. You see, the Green Party in Germany is very popular, and you will still hear a lot of green here in America. That all derives from the Greens over there. And this German woman greeted Bella Abzug in German, and Bella spoke fluent German. And she told Bella that they have a big surprise for her, that they would have the next day a private meeting with Gorbachev. Of course, I could understand the language, and I thought that's very interesting that a congresswoman from New York would have a private meeting with Gorbachev. So we walked in there. It was a huge ballroom with a beautiful buffet set up, caviar, lobster, shrimp, everything, wonderful. And I looked around, there were about 8 or 10 other people. They looked very, very disheveled. Dirty boots, torn jackets, and one woman, she walked up to me and she saw my button. I had a huge button. Physician, what's it called? Well, it had a slogan on there. And she recognized it. And she said, oh, you're one of us. And I said, sure I am. And so she became very friendly. And so I said, how come you weren't at the peace march? And she said, you know, we couldn't be seen in public. And I said, why not? Everybody else is here. She said, well, we are all member of the German Communist Party. And, of course, we came over to support Gorbachev. We went over the border illegal, so we couldn't be seen on the street. So I said, well, this is very interesting. I said, you are a member of the German Communist Party. I said, what is your future goals? Oh, she said, now this, remember, this is 1985. She said, right now we take Nicaragua. Then we go into Honduras. And then Mexico. I said, Mexico? That's such an impoverished, corrupt country. What do you want in Mexico? She said, that is our future base. I said, future base? What does that mean? She said, we will call back our territories, what the United States stole from us. I said, like what? She said, Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, Arizona, California. And I said, look, I am not a naive woman. You have to have a lot of people to do that. You know, that sounds to me like a revolution. She laughed out loud. She said, you Americans are so naive. You are like children. She said, your churches are doing the work for us. It hit me like a ton of bricks. I read about, in some church publication, about the sanctuary movement, that the churches were bringing in this people from Mexico and Central America and then handing over to the government, you know, for food stamps, housing, and all that. And I thought, this cannot happen. This cannot happen. So I said, well, when is this all going to happen, to call back your territories? She said, it all depends who your president is. It will happen sometime in the 2000s. It will happen. 2008, 2009. What is happening? We have about 20-some million illegals in our country. They're not all looking for work. That's for sure. Think about it. Think about it. You know, when people fear the government, that's tyranny. When the government fears the people, that's liberty. That's us. There are enough of us around who will not forfeit our freedom. Our freedom is very fragile. Stand up for this great country. Stand up for this great country, because there is no other place to run. Those of us who sailed past the Statue of Liberty, we came to a country of unbelievable freedom, an unbelievable opportunity. America is the greatest country in the world, if we can keep it. Thank you. God bless America. God bless you.
That was Kitty Werthmann speaking about her actual real-life experiences growing up in Austria under the Nazi regime in World War II. Some eerie parallels between what she experienced and what we seem to be experiencing here. We'll be right back after these messages. Thanks very much for joining me on the Freedom Above Fortune radio show.
Want to receive a big return on your investment? Then take your Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury to Ford of Ocala and ask for the works. For just $29.95, you'll receive Motorcraft Premium Synthetic Blended Oil and Filter Change. Rotate and inspect all Ford tires. Inspect air and cabin air filters. Test your battery, brakes, belts, hoses, and top off all fluids. This is no overpriced quickie roadside drive-through. Ford of Ocala guarantees white glove service with genuine quality Ford parts and factory-trained service techs. Ford do-it-yourselfers, Ford of Ocala's parts department is open to the public, stocking genuine Motorcraft parts with a factory guarantee. Ford of Ocala is the name you can trust. Your family and its safety are too important. Come to Ford of Ocala and ask for the works. It's just $29.95. It's ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen, where every day's a sale day. Their service will make the difference. Highway 441, Ocala and Bellevue. The traffic's not bad at all.
Florida drivers now have a new way to choose life. The Florida legislature approved a Choose Life specialty license plate. These tags are available at all county tag offices for $22, of which $20 goes to help women in crisis pregnancies. Help make this the number one selling tag in Florida and take a stand for life. Switch to the Choose Life tag today. For more information, visit the Choose Life website at www.choose-life.org or call 352-624-2854.
We've all heard of the Great Horn of Plenty, and there's plenty to celebrate here at the Insurance Den with tremendous savings on your business, home, and auto insurance. And you don't have to wait for Santa Claus to come to town for the great gift of savings that you'll get at the Insurance Den. Every day is like Thanksgiving and Christmas at the Insurance Den for great rates on commercial and personal policies. Call 1-800-356-3947. That's 1-800-356-3947. The Insurance Den. We're staying right here.
Color copies, just 29 cents.
Copy Cafe.
Color copies, just 29 cents.
Copy Cafe.
Color copies, just 29 cents.
Copy Cafe. Enjoy the lowest prices on copies at the Copy Cafe, West Gulf to Lake Highway, Crystal River, in the Pineview Plaza. Copy Cafe uses state-of-the-art high-speed digital equipment. At the Copy Cafe, you'll always get the lowest-priced faxes in town. And the Copy Cafe is the cheapest place to ship your packages, with black and white copies at only 5 cents a copy. No job too big or too small for the Copy Cafe on Highway 44, across from Bay Area Air Conditioning in the Pineview Plaza, Crystal River. Copy Cafe is your authorized FedEx shipping center, also offering notary services. Copy Cafe with a full supply of discounted shipping supplies, featuring a quick turnaround on flyers and brochures. Copy Cafe.
Call 563-COPY. That's 563-COPY for the Copy Cafe, Highway 44 in the Pineview Plaza, Crystal River. For all of your copying and shipping needs at the lowest prices.
We all know that when your appliances work harder or are not working correctly, they cost you more money, and nobody has extra money to waste on improperly working appliances. Here's one you probably didn't think of: your dryer. The lid that collects up in your dryer's vent pipe can be removed inexpensively, easily, and save you lots of money each month on your electric bill. Check it out. Will Construction Corporation can help you in this area, help you save on your electric bill. That's right, dryer vent pipe cleaning, an inexpensive way to save a lot of money each month. Not only will it save you money, it will increase the safety of your home. Proper removal of dangerous lint buildup hidden in your dryer's vent pipe will save you money and prevent tragedy. Give Will Construction Corporation a call at 352-628-2291. Over 15,000 house fires can be prevented each year by proper removal of dangerous lint buildup hidden in your dryer's vent pipe. Act now and save now. Call Will Construction at 352-628-2291. That's 628-2291. Beautiful results always with Will Construction Corporation. Doing business right since 1988.
American. Born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Determination. Pass it on. Brooke Ellison is a surprising person.
When I was 11 years old, I was hit by a car, and no one expected me to live.
She surprised people by living.
I've been paralyzed from the neck down and on a ventilator since that time.
And she surprised them by going to college.
Tomorrow, I will graduate from Harvard.
Brooke Ellison!
Determination.
pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a guest, Colin Jackson. He's the husband of Sherry Peel Jackson. And Colin agreed to come on the show, but we're taping this the day before because Colin has to work. He is a Atlanta, Georgia firefighter. Is that correct, Colin?
That is correct. The City of Atlanta Fire Department.
Well, for a little background for the listeners, of course, I've mentioned just about every show that I worked for the IRS for 5.5 years as a special agent. And, after I resigned, a few years after I resigned, I received a letter from a CPA. At the time, I was a CPA also. And I received a letter from someone named Sherry Peel Jackson, CPA, out of Stone Mountain, Georgia. Of course, after I resigned from the IRS, I felt like I was somewhat of the Lone Ranger. I'd certainly encountered attorneys and other CPAs and other professionals who had come across this tax information. But I was kind of intrigued, so I opened it up, and inside is a flyer that indicates that there's going to be a conference that she's going to be putting on. And she was going to be talking about the federal income tax, the Federal Reserve, talking about the income tax not being required to be paid by most Americans. And I thought, wow, this is just what I believe. What does this lady want with me? And so she explained that she was a former IRS agent. And so I thought, well, I have to call her because I've encountered so few IRS agents that have come to these same beliefs that I've just got to call her. So I called her about 9 p.m. Pacific, so it was about midnight her time. And I figured it was an office phone and that, you know, I would just be getting a voicemail. And who picks up the phone but Sherry Peel Jackson? And so we spoke for maybe an hour and discussed, her beliefs and how she acquired her beliefs. And I came to find out that she had worked for the IRS for approximately 8 years and had left. And then after leaving the IRS, she ended up researching these claims that some of her clients were making about the income tax. And she found that, indeed, these claims were true, that the IRS was deceiving the public about what their income tax obligations were. So from that point forward, Sherry and I, of course, really hit it off. She was a CPA from Georgia, and I was a CPA out in California, and yet we both worked for the IRS, and determined that, hey, there's a big problem here. I had confronted my supervisors because I learned about the income tax scam while I was still working at the IRS, whereas Sherry had already left. So Sherry and I and a few other IRS agents, former IRS agents, began speaking here and there around the country because there aren't that many IRS agents who are willing or able to speak up about these issues, about the income tax. And so we just became very good friends. And Sherry invited me, we were speaking in the Atlanta area at one point, invited me to her home, was able to meet her husband and her children, and just such a wonderful lady. So polite, so professional. Certainly would have been a credit to the IRS, but she had left just like me. So meanwhile, the government, the federal government, didn't like very well that people, these IRS agents, were speaking about the income tax in the way that they were. And, of course, I've mentioned various attacks that I endured, and, they decided to attack Sherry as well. And so Sherry had to endure a criminal prosecution, certain amount of other kinds of search warrants, and was executed in the house, various other issues, various other burdens that she had to take on from her stand. And so we've, kept in touch, certainly over the years. And so I'm having Colin Jackson, her husband, come on the show to speak about what happened to Sherry, what's going on in her life now, what she endured a few years ago. And so Colin Jackson has joined me on the show. And Colin, if you could maybe speak a little bit about, best you can, as far as how Sherry came to learn this information about the income tax and what she was doing about it after she learned it.
Well, she did some research concerning the income tax, and she was initially challenged. Where do you want me to start, Dylan? she was initially, when she left the IRS, most people believe that she left the IRS because of the things that she learned concerning the income tax, and that was not the reason she left the IRS. She left the IRS originally to come home to spend more time with the kids and to be a even better mother and wife. And so while she was home, after she left the IRS, she started a tax practice preparing tax returns. And one of her clients challenged her, began to tell her about the discrepancies with the implementation of the IRS tax code. And they later brought to her attention an USA Today newspaper ad that was sponsored by the We the People Foundation with Robert Schultz. And in that ad, there was a challenge to anyone, who could find a law that shows that it's mandatory for the average man or woman living in the United States to pay an income tax, to file a tax return and pay an income tax. Well, she has the IRS codes here at home and all those things, so she knew that she could just go right to it and find exactly where it was. So she started searching. She pulled out all of her codes and regulations and things and started searching in the codes where she thought they should be. And, to make a long story short, she still hasn't found it to this day. So, after a few days of researching it, her initial emotion was, surprise and wonder. And that transferred or grew to, anger. Because the thought of the federal government or the government that she worked for and believed in, committing such a fraud against its people that it's supposed to protect and serve was just an atrocious idea to her. I mean, we knew that in the past that they had done some very bad things to people, but she didn't think that this was another one. And so, she decided to stop paying an income tax. Okay. So after a while, after I guess about 3 or 4 years, was it that long? Yeah, about three or four years or so of not filing an income tax return, they began to send us, as one of my friends called them, love letters, form letters from the IRS that kind of says, hi, we just want to get your attention to make sure that there has not been a mistake. You haven't filled out your income. We haven't received your income tax return for these years, X, Y, and Z year. And she did nothing about the letter because she knew that she wasn't obligated to pay an income tax return, file an income tax return. And so she just dismissed the letter. As more and more letters came, the tone of the letters became more serious until finally she was called to a hearing at the federal courthouse, and she was charged with four counts of willful failure to file, representing 4 years that she did not file an income tax return. And she went to trial, and mind you, let me back up. Before she got those charges, we woke up one morning to a loud knocking and frantic, you know, doorbell ringing and all this kind of thing on our front door. It was probably about 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And so I went downstairs to see what was going on. I opened the door and there were about 10 agents or 10, you know, armored people standing at my door and in my yard, you know, and one of them was telling me to open the door, you know, he was very mean, very, you know, and so I told him to show me a warrant. I'm not opening the door unless you show me a warrant. So he showed me something that looked like a warrant. And I opened the door and let them in, and they stayed in our house and rummaged through all of our stuff for about 8 hours. And they took about, I guess, 15 to 20 boxes of paperwork, DVDs, CDs, things like that. Okay. What they were doing was building a case against Sherry. And from what I understand, they were going for as many charges as they could find, things like fraud, conspiracy to defraud the government, all kinds of things. The only thing they came up with that they could charge her with was a willful failure to file. And please correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, because you went through the same thing. In a willful failure to file case, the burden of proof is upon, in this case, the IRS, to prove that Sherry honestly and sincerely felt and believed that she had an obligation to file an income tax, but didn't do it anyway. Is that the way it's supposed to go?
Yeah, they have to prove a duty to file, and then a failure to file, and that the failure was willful, that she purposely ignored a duty that she knew she had.
Right. And so, with that, her thought was, how in the world can they prove, I mean, with all of the places I've been to give speeches and to share with people and the research I've done and the DVDs that I've put out, how could anybody think that I felt that I had a duty to file an income tax return? So she, in her mind, she knew that she would win this case. Especially after Joe won his, you won yours, Joe, and Bernie Kuglin won hers. You know, she thought, surely, you know, they can't find me guilty. Well, what happened was, in the trial, they did everything they could to tarnish or to try to destroy her character. It was a character assassination. That's what it was. And what they did in that process, in order to assassinate her character, was to bring several witnesses to the stand who outright lied. In Sherry's testimony, she testified that some of the things that she did in her research to come to the conclusion she wasn't obligated to file an income tax return was to ask some of her former coworkers who were still and current IRS agents. And she named names of some of the people who she spoke with, and each of those people got on the stand and said, no, I never spoke with Sherry about that. We never spoke with Sherry about that. And so they all lied. We have proof that two of them lied. But that proof, for whatever reason, we don't know. But Sherry's lawyer determined that the proof that we had was not necessary to be included in the trial. And so, you know, we think that hurt. So anyway, she was found guilty. She was charged with four counts of willful failure to file, and then sentencing guidelines. I believe she was supposed to be sentenced from anywhere from 28 months, to 33 months. That's what the sentencing guidelines called for a first-time convict, or whatever.
Colin, maybe we'll go ahead and take a This is Colin Jackson, husband of Sherry Jackson, explaining to us the sacrifices and difficulties that Sherry has endured and her family, and Colin. We'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for joining us.
Want to receive a big return on your investment? Then take your Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury to Ford of Ocala and ask for the works. For just $29.95, you'll receive Motorcraft Premium Synthetic Blended Oil and Filter Change. Rotate and inspect all four tires. Inspect air and cabin air filters. Test your battery, brakes, belts, hoses, and top off all fluids. This is no overpriced quickie roadside drive-thru. Ford of Ocala guarantees white glove service with genuine quality Ford parts and factory-trained service techs. Ford do-it-yourselfers, Ford of Ocala's parts department is open to the public, stocking genuine Motorcraft parts with a factory guarantee. Ford of Ocala is the name you can trust. Your family and its safety are too important. Come to Ford of Ocala and ask for the works. It's just $29.95. It's ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen, where every day's a sale day, their service will make the difference. Highway 441 Ocala and Bellevue. The traffic's not bad at all.
The Old Town Latin Cafe, home of the original Cuban sandwich.
Dine in, carry out, or delivery.
The Old Town Latin Cafe. Enjoy their daily lunch and dinner specials, such as
$5 lunch special.
That's right, $5 for a delicious, juicy Angus burger, French fries, and a drink. Open Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
108 North Pine Street, downtown Inverness. 352-560-0005. That's 560-0005.
The best Cuban and American food prepared fresh. Check out their full lunch and dinner menu. All dinners include rice and beans, sweet plantains, and the freshest of Cuban bread. Dine in, carry out, or delivery. Delicious party platters are available. Enjoy the Old Town Latin Cafe's $5 lunch special. Relax, kick back, and enjoy a great meal prepared by the Old Town Latin Cafe, home of the original Cuban sandwich.
Come on!
What's going on?
It's a humdinger.
A what?
A humdinger of a store.
What store?
Humdinger Deals Bargain Warehouse.
Not only is Humdinger Deals Bargain Warehouse a humdinger of a store, it has humdinger prices. This 80,000 square foot building is full of bargains and unheard of savings. You'll find huge, huge savings on anything and everything you need, from food, health and beauty aids, housewares, domestics, hardware, pet supplies, automotive, lawn and garden, building supplies, and so much more. Humdinger Deals Bargain Warehouse has closeouts and surplus products at rock-bottom prices. You'll pay just pennies on the dollar. Whether you live near or far, you'll need to see this incredible 80,000-square-foot store. They're located in Ocala on Northwest 44th Avenue between Highway 27 and Highway 326, just north of the I-75 Super Flea Market. You'll find everything you need under one roof at prices you won't believe. Now that's a humdinger of an offer.
Check out Humdingers.
Tell them you heard this ad on 104.3 FM and get your free Humdingers baseball cap.
It seems these days I'm in a haze and I can't concentrate on things, can't eat or sleep, feel incomplete and kind of scared and creepy. I look over my shoulder lots and shudder when I watch TV. I bite my nails and cuticles and watch my words very carefully. I bite my lip a lot and fidget with the buttons on my blouse. Why? Because there's a communist living in the White House. Why aren't people shocked or something? Why aren't people up in arms? Does anyone read history or see red flags or hear alarms? The streets are filled with deaf and dumb as I squeak like a mouse. There's a communist living in the White House. You may say, do I have any evidence to support my suppositions? His grandparents were socialists. His mother was. His father was a communist. He had Marxist professors. He taught a course in college on Saul Alinsky. He told Joe the Plumber on the campaign trail, spread the wealth, which is a direct quote from the Communist Manifesto written by Karl Marx. He appointed Van Jones to be his green job czar. Van Jones is a purported communist. His church of 20 years, what with Jeremiah Wright preaching, was black liberation theology, which is actually Marxism. Then as soon as he got in office, he had the government take over the banks and the car industry, and now he's trying to jam down our throats socialized medicine and the cabin trade. I mean,
How much more proof do you want?
Everybody, there's a communist living in the White House. Now what are we going to do about it?
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host. Website is freedomabovefortune.com. Our guest today is Colin Jackson. He is the husband of Sherry Peel Jackson, and we've been speaking about the difficulties that she and her family have faced, and Colin has been kind enough to join us on the show to describe in detail the kinds of sacrifices that the Jackson family has had to endure on behalf of the country, on behalf of the people, trying to get the truth out, trying to speak the truth, trying to live the truth, and of course they're being persecuted for doing so. And certainly as Christians, we are prepared for being persecuted for telling the truth. Our Lord and Savior was persecuted and told us that we would be also. So, Colin, welcome back to the show, and why don't you go ahead and continue. You were talking about the sentencing guidelines. You had mentioned the witnesses, at least three witnesses, two of which you're certain perjured themselves on the stand because they claimed that they never spoke to Sherry about these tax issues. You did mention about some kind of physical evidence proving that they were lying. Could you be more specific about what happened there?
Yes, well, one of her friends gave her a CD with tax information on it when she came to her and asked her if she knew anything about the notion that we're not really obligated to file an income tax return. So she gave her a CD about income tax laws and things like that. And on the CD, it has the mailing label to the girl who gave her the CD, to the friend who gave her the CD. All we would have had to have done is produce that during the trial, and that would have shown that they did have some conversation about that. Yeah.
So the, but as I recall, because I was at the trial, and as I recall, Sherry gave that testimony naming these people, these colleagues of hers, or former colleagues, and of course naming the names, then the government knew who they were, and then apparently that evening, after the trial was over, they went and found these three people, and then paraded them up onto the witness stand the following day. Wasn't that correct?
Yes, and that's what I believe happened.
And so, there was some indication from your attorneys, or just, you know, that somehow you didn't bring the physical evidence with you because you didn't think you'd need it, or you didn't expect them to lie, or you know, what can you tell us about that part of the situation?
Well, when we were here at home, the attorneys and Sherry, they all got together. They would get together and strategize how they were going to conduct the trial. And one of the things that Sherry brought out was the list of possible witnesses that the government would produce. And the four people who went to the witness stand and lied were four of the people who she thought that we should strategize about, you know, concerning, like, okay, well, what if they say this, what if they say that? And again, for whatever reason, her attorney didn't feel that it was necessary for us to even go over those things. So he just kind of dismissed it.
I see. So she, because of course she knew that she was going to refer to them, and then the government would be aware, and then they could very possibly call them. Now, did Sherry believe at the time that, you know, they would lie about the circumstance, about the meetings or about the conversations with her? Did she think that would just be beyond expectation, that they would actually lie on the witness stand?
I don't know. I really don't know whether she expected that or not. But I don't think she was surprised, because she mentioned to me that they could get in a lot of trouble if the IRS found out that they had spoken with her about that, about those kinds of things.
I see. Because they, how many of, you know, give as much information as you're comfortable with giving. How many of the agents were still working at the IRS at during the time of her trial? Because I know one of them was a special agent, wasn't he?
All of them were.
All of them were special agents?
No, all of them were still working with the IRS during the time of the trial.
Okay, but wasn't one of the current ones also a special agent in the criminal division?
I think so. I'm not sure. I'm not totally sure, so I don't want to say for sure. But I think he was.
Okay, but they were definitely current, and they were getting IRS paychecks at the time.
Absolutely. At the time of the trial, all of them were.
Okay. And, of course, Sherry, I was there to see her testimony, as were you. And clearly, I mean, she was just reciting her memory each encounter with these people. And, of course, she worked with them. She knew them. And so I would be typical. I mean, I could see. In fact, I did the same thing, although I was still working. The IRS. And I would try to bounce this off some of my peers. I even bounced it off my boss. And of course, I had quite a bit of evidence that actually became part of the trial that I had spoken to him. So back to your story. So these people, they get up on the stand, they testify, and they testify that they never spoke to Sherry about these issues at all. Isn't that correct?
Right. Correct. And so anyway, she was convicted. 4 counts, willful failure to file, and income tax return. The sentencing guidelines call for 28 to 33 months for first time conviction for willful failure to file. Well, for whatever reason, the IRS or the prosecution was granted an upward departure, which means they were allowed to tack on more months for Sherry, because she was a former IRS agent and she knew better and blah, blah, blah. And during the sentencing, one of the things that the judge said, and I couldn't believe my ears when she said it, was, we have to make an example out of you, because we can't have people going around not filing their income tax returns and thinking they can get away with it.
That must have hurt.
So...
That must have
been she just, you know, yeah, she wasn't shy about making the point that they were using her to make an example. And, you know, forgive me for this, Joe, but I this is the way I really feel. It's almost like slavery all over again. You know, it's like when a slave would try to run or do something, the master would tie up the biggest, baddest slave and, you know, strap them up and rope them up in front of, you know, in public, and whip them in front of everybody to make the other slaves too afraid to try to escape or to do anything. And that's the way I kind of feel like this judge was doing with Sherry. You know, slavery all over again.
And this was, I guess, you know, as far as racial issues, but I mean, this was a female white judge, correct?
A female white Southern judge.
Mm-hmm. And,
yeah.
I, you know, and of course, being a white person myself, I mean, I can only read about the horrendous treatment and, you know, think about it and just be abhorred. But I can only imagine to actually have that occur. And of course, with what you're talking about, with, how they would just make an example out of a slave to scare the rest, it never came up, I'm sure, during those times, about whether or not slavery was wrong, immoral, you know, any of those things. It only came up of how are we going to scare the rest of the slaves.
That's right.
And so the same thing goes in this trial, where, you know, we're not going to talk about whether there's actually a requirement, but we're just going to scare the rest of the slaves. And, you know, I know Sherry was very vocal about comparing slavery in America to the current income tax situation.
That's right. That's because it is slavery. It's financial and mental slavery. It's still going on to this day.
And so she was, of course, extremely dangerous to the status quo, because I would imagine, well, let's back up. Now, she told me, as I recall, that when her clients would come in, and I presume that, you know, a certain number of her clientele were African American, mm-hmm. and they would come in with this information, you know, like they had heard at their church, or they had heard from their relative or coworker about this thing about the income tax being voluntary, or, you know, most Americans aren't required to even pay it. And they would come into their CPA. I mean, imagine that. Well, let's go to our CPA and ask her.
Right, exactly.
So they come in and they ask her, what's going on with all this stuff? And so she hears it enough that she finally decides, maybe I should look into this myself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then she encounters this ad that the We the People Foundation puts together with the reward. And so, just knowing Sherry, I'm sure she would have gone and looked anyway just to satisfy her client's inquiries. But, wow, she finds that there's a $50,000 reward to prove that We the People Foundation is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens? She ends up finding out that their clients are right, and of course with her IRS experience and CPA experience, she knows how to look and see and figure these things out. And, you know, what's the bottom line? Is that she has to tell her clients the truth, that they're right, and of course then she, being a woman of integrity, has to decide, well, what am I going to do about my life, you know?
And, And you hit on a very key point. It's integrity, Joe, that's gotten us to this point. It's the level of integrity that has caused Sherry to be where she is right now. And it's the level of integrity that caused you to go through what you go through. I mean, you could have very easily turned a blind eye to what was really going on, but your integrity would not let you do that.
Well, I'm sure with Sherry, because she's suffering, you know, mountains more than I ever have, and you, of course, and your family suffering much more than our family. But you're right. It certainly, there's always that temptation, that little thought that comes in about, well, what would have happened if I had just not looked, if I had just kept my mouth shut, if I had looked. There's all these little junctures, these little walls that are put up, and you have to decide, are you going to climb over the wall, you know, and continue on? Because integrity means climbing over the wall.
Okay. Sherry Peel's address, Sherry Peel Jackson, and then the next line will be an 8-digit number. It's 5908-5019. The next line will be FCI, Foxtrot Charlie Institute, FCI Tallahassee, and that's 501 Capital Circle Northeast, Tallahassee, Florida 32301. Okay, the second address is where they can send funds to her account, and that's Sherry Peel Jackson. Again, her same inmate number, 5908-5019, and that's P.O. Box 474701, and that's in Des Moines, Iowa, 50947-0001. Okay, and then the third address I'll give is my address, and that's Colin Jackson, C-O-L-I-N Jackson, and the address, the number address is 1560, that's 1560 Field Green Overlook. Field as in football, green as in the color, that's one word, Field Green, and then Overlook, that's one word, spelled the same way it sounds. And the city is Stone Mountain, Georgia, 30088. That's it.
Fantastic.
That's it.
Fantastic. Well, I guess it's been Colin Jackson, and I'll certainly be repeating those addresses in the near future. We really appreciate you joining us, Colin, and please give my best and our best to Sherry. We'll keep her in our prayers each and every day. And thank you very, very much for joining us today.
And thank you so much for having me, Joe. I appreciate you. I love you, guy.
Take care.